Time now to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about food, glorious food. Arthur is also coming to our area. Good morning, Arthur.
Yes, I am coming to your area in the Sage Bushnell Library in Sheffield, Saturday, 2 o'clock, November 6th. And by that time, I will be very happy to be out of the city. No, I was saying to Jill this morning, actually, about how people misconceive of Brooklyn. I find it totally bucolic. But in addition to being gorgeous where I live, I can walk around the corner and get the newspaper. I don't need it. I get it delivered. And get a quart of milk. So that's why I live here. Well, that's a joke. Anyway, I was told that this is cultural appropriation, but I don't see it that way. I don't even know what that means anymore. But I had ropa vieja on my mind. I have no idea why. It just popped up several weeks ago, and I realized it is totally on my diet and something I haven't eaten in a long time. And what is ropa vieja but meat, beef, could be pork, but mainly it's beef, stripped into little strands and seasoned with, well, a variety of things. But it is essentially a Cuban dish that has been culturally appropriated by other people that face the Caribbean, like Colombians, Venezuelans, a lot of, I hate the word Hispanic, but I'll say Hispanic people. Not Mexicans. I even talked about this with my housekeeper, who is Mexican and a very good cook, and her husband is actually a chef, although the secret is he won't cook Mexican. He only cooks Italian, but anyway. So they don't make it in Mexico. She said, I've heard of it, but, you know. Anyway, I look it up online, and I find what looks like a really nice recipe that ran in the New York Times Magazine by one of their star food writers, J. Kenji Lopez. I'm thinking, what ethnicity is he? He could be Cuban, Lopez. Well, it ends up he is half German and half Japanese, and his wife is Lopez. So what does he know from Cuban ropa vieja? Well, according to the comments that came along with the recipe, he doesn't know a lot. But meanwhile, it looked like a really delicious recipe, so I started making it. It involves making a sofrito, which is a flavor base, let's call it. In a number of cuisines, they use the Spanish word sofrito. And in this case, it's sautéed onions, red peppers, and garlic. And I'm figuring, and with a lot of cumin, actually, I thought I was skeptical about the cumin. I'm going to post this recipe on the website, so you'll see. But it's like I use three large red peppers. He tells you to use all different colors because he's trying to make it fancy. Three red peppers, because this is, I figured, last Saturday at the farmer's market, last Wednesday, rather, at the farmer's market, was going to be the last day I was going to see peppers and tomatoes. So I bought a lot of peppers and a lot of tomatoes for a final splurge and before there no more. And so I used three peppers and one, well, pretty large onion, sautéed in vegetable oil. Doesn't have to be olive oil, and two enormous cloves of garlic, finely chopped. And when the onion and the peppers, I used two or three tablespoons of oil. It was a lot of peppers and onion. And you don't want to crowd the pan, and if you do have to crowd the pan, here's a hint. First of all, keep it over high heat. And second, keep tossing the onions and peppers together so they don't sit and stew in their own juices. And, you know, you don't want a lot of liquid accumulating at the bottom of the pan. Some may in a crowded pan. But if you keep tossing tossing, until they get wilted, it'll be minimized. And then you can let them go. And I actually, and then at that point when they were, onions and peppers were wilted, is only when I put in a whole tablespoon of cumin. And I thought that was, oh, no, 3 tablespoons, what am I talking about, of cumin, which I thought was an enormous amount, but in the end it wasn't. And then you cook that. There's a picture that ran with the Times recipe that shows the peppers and onions sort of wilted, but not brown. But for some reason, this Lopez guy keeps saying caramelized, and he also had a direction about, you know, you shouldn't, I don't know. It was all wrong. I cook peppers and onions all the time, so I'm used to this. The only thing is I don't add the garlic and onion, cumin necessarily. So that you can make ahead. And I made it so that the onions were sort of browned, you know, as they say, caramelized, and even some of the peppers were a little caramelized. It takes a long time. It's at least a half an hour, could be longer, to get it to this state. But you can do it ahead. You can even do it days ahead and keep it in the fridge until you're ready to make the ropa vieja, which means, depends on who you ask, it means either old clothes or old rags. Now, when you see the finished dish, you'll go with the rags definition. I do. And by the way, when I asked Irene what would she call, what, how would she translate ropa vieja, she said right away old rags. But if in polite books and recipes, they call it old clothes. I could just call it. You can just call it shmatas, using the Yiddish word. Anyway, that's the base of this dish. What the dish is the homiest of homey dishes. It's some really tough meat cooked until it's tender, and which is a long time, and then shredded into ropey pieces. I say ropey, but, you know, ropa is, you know, into rags. Now, the classic meat for this is flank steak, which has gotten very expensive. I'm not sure you would buy a flank steak these days just to cook it and rip it up. Then there's, and I don't like flank steak even when it's flank steak. Got to be truthful here. It's the leanest cut of meat on the animal, and it's very difficult to make it juicy and delicious to me. Anyway, the other piece of meat that I saw in some recipes was skirt steak, which is even more expensive than flank steak. So I go to the butcher. I have a real butcher to consult on this, Mike. And I said, Mike, you know, he knew about ropa vieja. He's Mexican. He says, I never make it, but I know about it. He said, and there are people who come in and they do buy flank steak. And he immediately said, flank steak. He said, that's what everybody uses. I said, no, I'm not going to use that. I was going to thought maybe I'd get some kind of chuck, piece of chuck that would do. But he said, no, try this. It's called tri-tip. Have you ever heard of tri-tip, Marshall?
Yes.
Oh, good. What do you know about it?
I don't know anything about it, and I'm glad you brought it up because I don't understand what tri-tip means.
It's a trendy cut of meat. Okay. Of course, it was always there on the animal, but it wasn't cut out the way it is lately, or maybe it always was, but nowadays people want this particular muscle, and it's a triangular flat muscle that is part of the sirloin, and it has a particularly beefy flavor. I have made tri-tip for its own sake as a steak, and you cook it exactly the same way you would cook London broil and slice it thinly on a bias, you know, on an angle, and you get really nice, tender, very beefy steak. Sliced steak, good for a sandwich, by the way. Good steak sandwich steak. But I never thought to buy it to rip it up. So it's interesting because Mike knew exactly what I needed, which was a piece of muscle that would go into long strands when it was well cooked. And the New York Times recipe had me braising the meat, browning it, that means browning it, and then cooking it with a liquid. In this case, it was chicken broth, and I forget what all else. Maybe it wasn't too much else. Tomatoes, I think. And then shredding it and combining it with the sofrito. But that didn't, you know, it didn't really sound homey to me or authentic. And I wanted to culturally appropriate, culinarily appropriate, the authentic way of doing this. And so I looked it up in books, and I have a big library, and I had 5 Cuban books on the shelf. I used to have more, I know, but I've sold them off. And then I also looked in other more general books to see what I could find. And what I found is, and by the way, one of the comments with the New York Times recipe was, oh, my mother was Cuban, she always boiled the meat, and then we had the broth to make soup with. And I think she said she made squash soup with it. And I could see that, by the way. And then I am now, by the way, going to readily dispose of at least 3 of the 5 Cuban cookbooks that I have on my shelf and that I consulted, because they were terrible recipes. One of them didn't even have a recipe for ropa vieja. Meantime, everybody's saying this is like the Cuban national dish, and then there's no recipe in a Cuban cookbook. But the one recipe that I did find did boil the meat, and I said, you know, this sounds to me more like what a Cuban home cook would do. So, I had already made my sofrito from the Times, but I believe this one had you dice. The only difference with the sofrito was that you dice the onion and peppers, and I could see how in the end that might integrate into the meat a little better, differently anyway. But I, in the end, liked the red strands running through my meat in the finished dish. So I boiled the tip in water to cover it well, a good teaspoon of salt, and 1 carrot, 1 stalk of celery, 1 rib of celery, rather 1 rib, and a small onion, which I quartered, peeled and quartered, and I threw that in the pot. And it took at least 4 hours for this piece of tri-tip to get to a place where I thought I should turn off the heat. Huh. I kept testing it with a fork, but it ends up this tri-tip doesn't tenderize the way, and at least when you're boiling it. I didn't really boil, by the way. I let it very slowly simmer for 4-something hours. And finally, it was more tender at the end, and I could see that it was, at least it wasn't bleeding, that it was well cooked, but I couldn't tell if it really had tenderized until I realized that I could shred off some of the meat just by lifting the meat out of the pot and sort of poking at it. So I thought, well, that's all I really need, and that was all I really needed. So I would say for this tri-tip, it takes a long time. I would say a piece of chuck would take almost as long, and certainly I think a flank steak. But, you know, the flank steak is way too expensive to do this with. The tri-tip, I think my 2.5-pound piece of tri-tip was like $13, $15. It wasn't so bad. And in the end, when I let it cool in the broth was delicious, and I stripped down the meat. There was a little layer of fat, which I had not removed prior to cooking, and I just shaved that off. There's also a membrane on the tri-tip. I want to talk to Mike, my butcher, about that membrane. Maybe he should be removing it before I cook it. I don't know. The meat does plump up a lot, so even though it starts out pretty fat, in the end you're going to end pretty thin. You're going to end up with it being this fat clump of meat. I let it cool, and then just with my hands, I tore it into shreds. And meantime, I took out my sofrito from the fridge, and I added a half a 28-ounce can, or if you have a small can, a 14-ounce can of tomatoes. And, you know, it doesn't have to be plum tomatoes that I used. it could be a 14-ounce can of chopped tomatoes, but without seasoning, you know, any brand you like, but without seasoning. It doesn't have to even be Italian tomatoes. Hard to find those in 14-ounce cans. Anyway, add a can of tomatoes to your sofrito and bring it to a simmer. Let it simmer together, the sofrito and the tomatoes, for about 10 minutes, no more. And then add your shredded meat and keep cooking. Wait, the most important thing, I added back in 2 cups of the broth that I made. And in fact, in the end, after I took the meat out, there was only about 2.5 cups. So I saved the 1/2 cup, which I used the next day when I reheated it, because it does, in fact, sort of absorb moisture. And that really delicious broth, I think, made it. So you're making a sauce with 2 cups of the broth, 14 ounces of canned tomato, your sofrito, which is quite a bit. It's going to be like 2.5 cups of sofrito. And you let it all simmer together. You add the meat, and then you keep on simmering. I didn't have to simmer it too long. I only did it like maybe 15 minutes. And then, as any Cuban home cook will tell you, it tastes better the next day. So it sat in the fridge overnight. And the next day, I must say, it was sensational. It really was. And I had a friend for lunch. We haven't been inviting friends in for... Everybody's been staying in, so, or in their own place. And this friend said, well, she's not ready to go to a restaurant yet. Even though in New York City, by the way, you must have vaccination in order to get into a restaurant. They will check, and they need to check, and they should check. And I did a cousin's thing yesterday. We were 12, and my Jersey cousins were really shocked that they would have to show proof of vaccination. But, of course, they had it. So, yeah. So that was my ropa vieja. It was sort of my last gasp of summer dish, because it had, even though there were canned tomatoes, it had 3 red peppers in it. The peppers are, I must say, I always say this, the end of the season, peppers, sweet peppers, are usually the sweetest. And by that time, I'm sick of peppers, but I had to do it this year. Other thing that the universe was telling me to cook, the universe didn't tell me about ropa vieja. I still don't know where I got that bug in my head. But the universe told me to cook Swedish meatballs. Because they were on my mind. And I go for physical therapy last week, and Jeffrey, my therapist, says, oh, I made IKEA's Swedish meatballs last night. I said, what do you mean? He says, oh, you can find this recipe online. He says, I just had a hankering. And also, he has a 2-year-old. He says, Olivia loves meatballs. So I thought, all right, well, I'll make Swedish meatballs. It's very easy. And they did taste, he said they tasted better than IKEA. So I went online, and I found this recipe, and I don't know if it's the same one he made, although I think there's more than one. These are like IKEA meatballs on the Internet. But I must say, it was they were very delicious, and I got over my Swedish meatball craving, although I would make them again in a minute. The only thing about making meatballs is that meatballs, good meatballs, have bread in them, or rice, or some kind of starchy ingredient that makes them lighter in the end and helps bind them. Now, the recipe that I found called for 2 slices of white bread, crust removed and cut into little cubes before you just soaked it, which was ridiculous, I thought, 1. And 2, I'm not keeping bread in the house, much less white bread. But I do keep breadcrumbs in the house because they stay, and I'm not using them very often these days, but I do keep them in the house. And I used these Swedish meatballs, 1/2 cup of breadcrumbs. But you got to moisten your breadcrumbs before you, I know this from making other meatballs, not just put them into the dry mix. So what I did was I put my breadcrumbs in the bowl, and then I grated, well, I put in with 1/2 cup of breadcrumbs, a half a cup, this recipe, by the way, will be on our website too, a half a cup of breadcrumbs, a half a cup of milk, or half and half, whatever you have, and one small onion grated on the coarse side of the grater, and I grate it right into the bowl with the breadcrumbs and the milk. I stir it all together, but that really moistens the breadcrumbs very well. And then I add my seasonings. This gets everything homogenous before you add the meat. A half a teaspoon of, these are the Swedish seasonings, I laugh. A half a teaspoon of allspice, and a half a teaspoon of nutmeg. My nutmeg is freshly grated, so it has some power. If you're using in a jar, and the jar is more than 6 months old, I would use a heaping half teaspoon of nutmeg, and a half a teaspoon of freshly grated black pepper, and salt, you know, is to taste, but I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to say start with a teaspoon of salt. You're probably going to end up going up to a teaspoon and a half, and what you'll do is at the end, when this is all mixed up, you make a little patty, and you just grill it in this tiny saucepan until it's cooked through, and then you can taste the seasoning and add salt or pepper, more or less. Well, you can't do less. So this amount is good for for 12 ounces. I mix beef and pork. Now, if you look at, I did look at old recipes for Swedish meatballs, and the Swedish ones often are mixing veal into this mix. And you can buy in the supermarket these days that beef, pork, veal mix that you use for meatloaf, and use that for this. But I bought a 12 ounces of pork and 12 ounces of ground beef, and I add that to this bread and seasoning mixture, and use a fork to mix it all together until it's homogeneous, or if you like, use your hands. I wouldn't squish it together too much. I like the fork method for this. It keeps them sort of lighter. Anyway, I scoop out the mixture with a tablespoon measure. I would say it's more than an actual tablespoon, but not that much more. And you can this is a good technique when you're making a lot of little meatballs. Put them, and I do this for my little Neapolitan meatballs too. I measure it all out and put it out on a baking sheet, and then I can roll the meatballs. You know, then you just do all the rolling at once. You could do it rolling each one and putting the rolled one down on the sheet, but I find the other way is quicker. And that's it. You fry the meatballs. These are good fried meatballs, and they're little meatballs. They take no time. I skim the bottom of the skillet with vegetable oil, but then I add some butter for flavor, and I take the meatballs out as they're browned, not cooked through. They won't be necessarily cooked through, and put them aside. And when you're all finished, and it's going to take a lot of meatballs, like, you know, 48 meatballs, I figure, you pour off the frying oil, add 3 tablespoons more butter to the pan, and make a roux with 3 tablespoons of flour, and you're making your Swedish gravy with 1.5 cups of beef broth, a can of beef broth. You may add a little bit of water to thin it out later, or a little bit more milk later, but a can or a cup and a half of beef broth. And beat that in, and you've got now, when it comes to a simmer, a thickened gravy. And, oh, by the way, of course, you're scraping up whatever was left from the frying of the meatballs as soon as you add the extra butter and flour and making your roux. So your roux will probably turn beige, at least, almost as soon as you start cooking and scraping. And then you add the meatballs and cook them for no more than, like, 10 minutes, they'll be cooked through. And then you add either cream or half and half to your gravy and feast.
You know what's great about...
Now, ideally, you want these on mashed potatoes. But, ideal is hard to achieve in life.
No, you're right. But, you know, they're also not bad on those big, on big noodles. What are those?
Oh, of course they are.
Yeah,
wide noodles are wonderful.
The great
any noodles are wonderful.
There's something about meat and gravy and mashed potatoes.
I know. And cream gravy, too, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I asked I asked Jeffrey, my therapist, what they ate it on, and he said, he also eats ketogenically. He said, no, we gave in and had mashed potatoes. I had fried potatoes yesterday. They were so good, I thought, well, you know, when fried potatoes are really, really good, you have to eat them.
Oh, you can't waste them. That's exactly right.
No, and last week I had some cookies and it didn't do any damage. So.
Well, you're allowed.
You know how that is.
Yes, I do.
You know, I should probably give the phone number to call the Sage Bushnell Library.
Okay.
Which is in Sheffield. I haven't tracked the bookings, but it's only 30 people allowed in the room. But I do think there's availability still, and I'm going to tell you right now, as I look up the phone number, who remembers phone numbers?
I don't, because it has a bad
thing. No, they're all on your phone.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, but this is not one that is in my phone, so I have to, the Sage Bushnell Library, or is it the Bushnell Sage Library?
Bushnell Sage, yeah.
Bushnell Sage Library. I'll get this right eventually after I'm there. Is 413-229-7004, and again, it's at 2 o'clock on Saturday, November 6th, at the Bushnell Sage Library. I'm going to get this right. one-on-one with Schwartz.
And by the way, good response to adding the recipe to that from people.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do this. It's also a good record for myself. Because as I said previously, I get asked questions about recipe I talk about on the air, and then if I haven't actually written down the recipe, and it's weeks later and it's still not in my head, I'm not going to remember the oven temperature. And as I always say, the only misinformation I get from social media is wrong oven temperatures and baking times. So I want to be precise about those things. So, yes, today I will post ropa vieja a la Schwartz, a la the authentic way, a homey recipe. And so this is the other thing that was, I have to say this. The other recipe, part of the Times recipes, this guy combined two recipes in one that he shouldn't have. Picadillo, which is ground beef, made in a similar way, but including olives, capers, and pimentos. In fact, they sell that condiment of olives, capers, manzanilla olives, capers, and pimentos as a product called alcaparado. You can find that in the supermarket. But that's what goes into picadillo. It never goes into ropa vieja. So he put the garnish of not even a garnish, and raisins, too. And I'm thinking in the beginning, I don't want to make raisins. They really are bad for my blood sugar. Anyway, so that's it. No raisins, no olives, no pimentos in this recipe, just good, fresh red peppers.
All right, Arthur. We will speak to you.
I did it today. I went over.
That's okay. That's okay.
It's okay. Then I'll keep going.
Well, I don't know why you don't a certain amount of. All right, Arthur. We'll speak to you next week.
Take care, everybody.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. RobinHoodRadio.com also is where you'll find him.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, HGSHomeChef.com.